the lieutenant that, surely, when he questioned her. I mean, he was bound to have asked about Titania slapping Nora. And why would Nora have left the apartment with Morty? Why go outside to be together when they had her apartment? She wouldn't have traipsed outside in the cold to the back of the block. Edgar picked up his newspaper again. Papa, are you going to try and find Mortimer? Kitty asked, before he could disappear back behind the newsprint. I think we really should try to speak to him. Her father sighed and set his paper aside once more. What do I say if I track him down? Go home, your wife is hysterical, and, by the by, did you murder Nora or Peggy? We need to talk to him. Kitty looked at Matt for support. At the very least, we need to know his state of mind. It doesn't sound as if he's thinking rationally.
If he's left Titania, then believe me, he is doing the most rational thing I've ever known him do, Edgar muttered, as he flicked open his silver card case and began to look out for various telephone numbers.
What should we do if Lieutenant Tanfield drops by to see us? We left him that message about the note and the tickets, remember? Kitty said, as Edgar began calling some of the places where he suspected his friend may have gone.
I see, thank you. Yes, we're on our way. We'll pick him up, don't worry.
Edgar set the receiver down.
I've found him. He's at the Silver Rose, roaring drunk, apparently. I told them we'd come and get him, Edgar said. Righto, we had better go then, Matt said.
Edgar looked hopefully at his discarded newspaper, ignoring Kitty's glare. You need to go with Matt, Papa. Mortimer doesn't know us very well, and you are his friend. He is much more likely to agree to accompany you. I suppose I should stay here in case the lieutenant calls. Kitty made the offer grudgingly. She would much rather have gone with them to collect Mortimer from the bar. However, she could see that three people turning up to collect an inebriated Mortimer might not go well. Matt nodded his agreement.
I think that's a sensible suggestion. We'll bring him back here if he doesn't want to see Titania.
Edgar finally gave up on his newspaper and rose from his seat.
Very well. The Silver Rose is not the most salubrious of establishments, so I think you remaining here to man the fort is a wise choice, Kitty darling.
Kitty started to clear away her father's coffee tray and tried not to feel too disappointed at not being in the thick of the action. Matt gave her a knowing smile and a quick kiss.
We'll be back soon, hopefully with Mortimer, and we can find out what he wasn't telling us the day we found Nora's body.
Matt knew Kitty was disappointed at not joining them on the trip to collect Mortimer from the Silver Rose. Edgar was surprisingly silent on the way to the bar as they passed the tall buildings in the centre of the city. Beyond telling Kitty before they had departed that the place was not very nice, he had made no further comments. Matt wasn't sure what kind of state they would find Mortimer in when they arrived. Clearly the bartender had been happy that they were agreeable to collecting Mortimer, so he must be causing some kind of nuisance. The Silver Rose was in a part of the city that Matt and Kitty had not previously visited. This was an area with few signs of Christmas. There were blocks of tenement buildings, all of which appeared to be slightly run down, and there was litter amongst the piles of dirty snow. No one had made any attempt to clear the sidewalk, and everywhere seemed grimy. Tattered posters advertising closing down sales and compulsory purchase notices were on nearby buildings. The bar itself was a small, dingy door set in a blank brick wall with a hand-painted sign above it. Matt guessed that many of these places had been established during the Prohibition period and still retained a discreet word-of-mouth presence. Matt paid the cab and asked the driver to wait while he and Edgar entered the bar. The inside of the bar was as gloomy and dank as the outside. They soon spotted Mortimer sitting at a corner table with several empty glasses in front of him. A couple of other patrons were playing at the pool table, and two more men were seated on stools at the bar. The bartender nodded to Edgar as they entered. He clearly knew him well, and Matt wondered what his father-in-law had been up to that he was frequenting places like the Silver Rose.
Mortimer, my dear fellow, time for us to go,
Edgar said. Mortimer looked at him with bleary eyes.
I've left Titania. Nora is dead. I've nowhere to go.
He stank of stale liquor. His shirt was crumpled and dirty, and his collar and tie lay askew.
You can come home with me. The taxi is outside, waiting for us, and Matthew here will help us along.
Edgar indicated Matt.
Better to leave me alone. Save yourself,
Mortimer groaned.
I need another drink.
His speech slurred as he spoke.
I rather think you've had enough for now, old chap. Come along with us.
Edgar signalled to Matt to assist him in prising the reluctant and inebriated Mortimer from his seat to get him outside to the waiting taxi.
I don't want to go home,
Mortimer wailed, as Matt took one arm and Edgar attempted to take his other side.
I told you we're going to my apartment, Edgar soothed.
Mortimer wobbled to his feet before attempting to escape their clutches. Matt caught hold of him just in time to prevent him from upsetting the table before him.
The car is waiting. We have to go,
Edgar insisted, as Mortimer threw one arm around his shoulders, dislodging his hat.
You're a good friend, Eddie, Mortimer slurred. One of the best.
Between them, they managed to walk Mortimer out of the Silver Rose onto the sidewalk. Once there, the icy air seemed to hit the inebriated man with the force of a cold bucket of water in the face.
Where are we going?
He blinked at Edgar as Matt attempted to keep Mortimer upright and open the taxi door at the same time. Not an easy task on the icy pavement.
To my apartment, where you are going to drink some coffee and work out what you're going to do next.
Edgar gasped as Matt bundled Mortimer into the back of the cab. Matt clambered in alongside him while Edgar got in the front beside the driver.
Back to my address and for heaven's sake don't swing him about too much, Edgar instructed with a nervous backward glance at his friend.
Mortimer sat slumped in the corner of the cab, his eyes closed. Matt hoped he would stay like that until they reached their destination. Kitty tidied up the flat while Matt and Edgar were gone. She hoped they might get some information from Mortimer when he arrived, although if he was too inebriated, she didn't hold out much hope of success. The men had not been gone long when the doorbell buzzed. Kitty hurried to answer, hoping it might be the lieutenant so she could at least give him the items she had discovered in Peggy's handbag. Instead, as she peered out through the spy hole, she saw Lorena Briggs tapping her toes impatiently on the mat.
Lorena, what a surprise. Do come in.
Kitty opened the door and stood aside as the other woman swept past her with a swish of expensive fur and perfume.
I'm afraid my father has had to go out for a short time. Is there anything I can help you with?
Kitty offered as she followed Lorena into the drawing room.
May I get you some coffee or tea?
Lorena took off her coat and handed it to Kitty as if she were the maid.
A coffee would be very welcome.
Kitty raised her eyebrows at this offhand treatment, but hung up the coat and went to put on the kettle.
Will your father be long?
Lorena asked as Kitty re-entered the room.
No, I don't think so.
Kitty wondered what the woman wanted with her father.
I'm so very sorry about the loss of your mother.
Lorena bowed her head in acknowledgement of Kitty's condolences.
It has been the most ghastly time. The police told me that you and your husband found her.
We did. We were on our way to get breakfast. It was awful,
Kitty said, before going to take the kettle from the hob to make a pot of coffee.
I can imagine,
Lorena continued, when Kitty returned a minute or two later with a tray.
We still haven't discovered what became of her jewelry, you know. Everything was missing, her engagement and wedding rings even, and a dress ring my father gave her just before he died.
Lorena took a cigarette from a silver case and inserted it in a small carved ivory holder. She offered the case to Kitty, who declined politely with a shake of her head.
Her jewels were missing when we found her, Kitty said, as Lorena lit her cigarette and blew a small plume of smoke into the air.
We hoped she'd taken them off and put them in her safe, or that they were somewhere in the apartment, but there's no sign of them anywhere. We searched the apartment from top to bottom. The police have notified all of the jewelry stores,
Lorena said. Kitty poured coffee for both of them.
Oh dear, that's terrible. I do hope you get them back. When all of that business about Peggy came out, I thought that perhaps she had taken them.
Lorena tapped some ash from the end of her cigarette into the glass Lalique ashtray that Kitty had placed next to her.
You've heard about the business with her pawning my mom's silver, I suppose.
Yes, that was another dreadful shock. She seemed such a nice girl. She was so young, and she suffered such a terrible death. Kitty shuddered at the thought.
Quite.
Lorena's nose crinkled, as if she had suddenly detected a bad smell.
I still believe it was suicide. The police were going to arrest her, you know, for Mom's murder. I believe Mom caught her stealing. I think she took something else from the apartment the night Mom was killed. Mom must have followed her downstairs and caught her passing it to her fence, and they strangled her and stole her jewels.
Lorena's eyes narrowed as she looked at Kitty, as if determining if she believed her.
I suppose that's possible, Kitty agreed. But surely then she would have just packed her bags and disappeared with this mysterious accomplice. Why wait around to be arrested? Or take her own life? There was a lot of money in the safe, and she knew the combination, I believe.
Lorena shrugged her expensively cashmere-clad shoulders.
Remorse, perhaps. She may not have been thinking clearly, or her accomplice abandoned her. Peggy was terribly gullible, you know. Mom always said she didn't have enough brain power to light a candle, let alone a room.
Perhaps someone was using her.
That does sound more plausible, Kitty agreed, before taking a sip of her coffee.
I did wonder if Peggy was in cahoots with Horatio for a while. They always had their heads together.
Lorena stubbed out her cigarette and removed it from its holder.
Well, he can stop complaining about having no money now. I've just come from Mom's attorney for the reading of her will.
Oh? Kitty peered over the brim of her coffee cup, eager to hear whatever Lorena had to say on the matter.
Mom left him a bequest in her will. $10,000. He should be able to make himself scarce quite quickly with that.
Lorena's lip curled in distaste.
I understand from my father that he's been in your family's employ for a very long time,
Kitty remarked mildly. While she was sympathetic to Lorena's recent loss, she really didn't like the woman.
Too long, if you ask me, always snooping about and telling tales to Mom.
Lorena added sugar and more cream to her coffee.
Papa said that Mortimer disliked him, Kitty said.
Mortimer hates that Horatio felt it necessary to voice his disapproval of his affair with my mom. Horatio is always preaching, given half a chance, and he was devoted to my father. Honestly, everyone knew that Mortimer and Titania were not suited to one another. It was only a matter of time before they divorced,
Lorena said.
You approved, though, of your mother and Mortimer's relationship.
Kitty was taken aback by Lorena's comments, but did her best not to show it.
Why not? He was a good lapdog for Mom. Her money was locked down tight, so if he amused her and made her happy, then good for them.
It gave her less time to poke her nose into my business,
Lorena declared with a sniff. Kitty thought they were now coming to the crux of Lorena's dislike of Horatio and her eagerness to have him gone. If the manservant was in the habit of passing information to Nora, and some of that news was unfavourable to Lorena, she would be eager to see him leave. She wondered if the same could be said of Mortimer. Was that his reason for wanting Horatio to retire too, rather than just the servant's distaste for the affair?
Mothers can be difficult, I suppose, no matter how much we love them.
Kitty forbore to say that she had lost her own mother when she had been a child.
Mom's problem was that she always had to be right about everything. She liked to choose my friends, my clothes, my decor.
Lorena paused to drink her coffee.
Your husband? Kitty suggested. Lorena set her cup down on the saucer and gave Kitty a sharp look.
Yes, including my husband. We had huge fights about my marriage. Mom didn't approve, even though we are very happy together.
Kitty thought Lorena emphasized the last part of her statement just a touch too much.
I suppose that's parents for you, Kitty agreed in a mild tone.
Lorena glanced at the clock on the mantelpiece.
My, I really need to get gone. Please tell your father I called to see him. Mom has left him a small bequest in her will. Tell him he'll know what it is. It was something of a joke between them.
Lorena stood and smoothed her skirt.
Of course, I'll get your coat.
Kitty fetched Lorena's fur.
Tell him to collect it from the apartment. Horatio knows it's his,
Lorena remarked mysteriously, and left without thanking Kitty for the coffee.
Well, really, Kitty said, as the door closed behind her guest.
Chapter 15. Lorena had only been gone for about 5 minutes when Kitty heard the scrape of the key in the lock. She jumped up to find Edgar and Matt bearing what appeared to be a very inebriated Mortimer between them.
I'll make more coffee, Kitty said, as Matt and Edgar deposited Mortimer in one of the armchairs.
She was starting to feel like a waitress in a tea room with the number of times she had boiled the kettle. Edgar collapsed thankfully onto his favourite armchair beside the fire.
I thought we saw Lorena as we were arriving.
You did. She's just gone. She popped in here with a message for you,
Kitty called over her shoulder as she headed into the kitchenette once more.
Oh, really? What did she want?
Edgar asked when Kitty returned after filling the kettle.
She had just come from an appointment with her mother's lawyer. She had been to sort out her mother's estate and her affairs. It seems that you've been left a bequest in Nora's will, Kitty said.
Edgar immediately perked up and looked interested, while Mortimer merely groaned in his seat as Matt hung up their overcoats in the hallway.
What kind of bequest? Edgar asked.
Kitty shrugged. She didn't say exactly. She said something about it had been an item that was the nature of a joke between the two of you. She said that you could collect it from the apartment. Horatio knows all about it, apparently.
A broad smile spread across her father's face.
Oh, I have a feeling I know what this is. She always said she would leave it to me. How very splendid of her.
He didn't elaborate any further, and Kitty was forced to have her curiosity unsatisfied. Once the kettle was boiled and the coffee pot replenished, they started to try and sober Mortimer up enough to get some information from him.
Now then, dear boy, let's get some coffee into you.
Edgar placed a cup and saucer in front of his friend.
What's the point? You should have just left me at the Silver Rose,
Mortimer sniffled, clearly feeling very sorry for himself.
Nonsense! Nora would have hated seeing you like this,
Edgar declared robustly.
There's no point to anything now she's gone.
Mortimer's tone was mournful as he picked up the coffee cup with a shaky hand.
You can't just dive into a whiskey bottle, dear boy, and stay there. Titania was here earlier looking for you. She's dreadfully upset about everything.
Edgar watched as his friend took a restorative sip of the inky black sweetened liquid inside the porcelain cup.
Titania be blowed. I've told her it's over between us. I can't go on with her any longer. If I can't be with Nora, then I don't want to be with anyone.
Mortimer waved the cup around, spilling a few drops of coffee on the front of his already grubby shirt.
Deary me,
Edgar observed sorrowfully, as Mortimer subsided and took some more sips of coffee.
When did you last see Nora? Was it after the party?
Kitty asked in a kindly tone. Mortimer turned his bloodshot gaze on her.
I tried to see her, to make sure she was all right. I had to take Titania home after she slapped Nora.
His chin wobbled as he spoke.
Disgraceful behavior. I took Titania back to our apartment. She was making a scene as usual. I'd told her I wanted a divorce before we went to Nora's.
I have to say, my dear chap, that seems like bally bad timing on your part. Why on earth did you tell her right before the party? You know how hot-headed she is, especially when she's had a drink, Edgar said.
Mortimer bridled at the criticism.
She goaded me into it, always bossing me around and holding her money over me. She was telling me all these ridiculous plans she had, waffling on about a cruise in the new year. I knew it was simply a way to get me away from Nora.
Kitty looked at Matt as Mortimer gulped some more coffee.
You didn't go back up to Nora's apartment later to see her, after the party ended? Kitty asked.
Mortimer clattered his cup back down on the saucer so violently Kitty thought at first that he had broken it. He stared wild-eyed at her, as if suddenly realizing what she had been asking him.
Who told you that? I never saw Nora again after I took Titania home.
But you did leave your apartment and go back up to the penthouse as the party ended to try to see Nora, Matt said.
Well, I was concerned about her, like I said. Titania had slapped her pretty hard. She left an imprint of her hand on Nora's cheek.
Mortimer's hands were shaking, and he clasped them together in his lap to stop the tremors.
So once Titania had gone to bed, you let yourself out of the apartment and went upstairs to see Nora?
Matt pressed the question again.
Yes, all right,
Mortimer groaned and placed his head in his hands.
I admit I did go upstairs, but she wasn't there.
At least I didn't see her.
Did you see anyone else? Kitty asked.
Peggy. I knocked on the door and she said Nora had retired for the evening and she closed it in my face. She didn't offer to go and tell Nora I was there or anything,
Mortimer said.
Kitty thought it was convenient that the one person who could have confirmed this was also now dead. Had Peggy told Lieutenant Tanfield about Mortimer's return visit? He certainly hadn't said anything to them about this.
What did you do then? Matt asked. I hung about for a bit on the landing, hoping that Nora might have heard the door and would come out, but she didn't. So I went and took the elevator back to my apartment, Mortimer said.
Did you check on Titania when you got back?
Edgar asked.
Mortimer snorted.
Do you go poking a sleeping bear?
No, I went to the guest room and made myself comfortable in there. The next thing I knew was later that morning when the telephone rang and Lorena told me Nora was dead and the police wanted to talk to me.
Mortimer leaned his head back against the armchair, his face now chalky white against the black leather.
You didn't see or hear anyone else while you were going to the penthouse apartment or on the way back?
Matt asked.
Think carefully, dear boy, before you answer,
Edgar urged.
It could be very important.
Mortimer had his eyes closed and his brow furrowed as he thought.
I heard the elevator when I was on the stairs, but other than that, nope, nothing at all,
he said eventually. It seemed they were at a temporary impasse. Kitty hoped her father had some kind of plan to persuade Mortimer to go home now he was a little more sober. Her stomach growled, reminding her that it was lunchtime. They had their evening meal already ordered from the kitchen downstairs, but had made no firm plans for lunch. The doorbell rang once more, and Matt went to answer it. Mortimer appeared to have slipped into a kind of slumber, emitting snoring sounds from the corner of his mouth. Lieutenant Tanfield followed Matt into the sitting room. The shoulders of his dark brown overcoat were damp, and Kitty realized that it must be snowing once more. The policeman raised a surprised dark eyebrow at the sight of a rather disheveled Mortimer asleep in the armchair. Matt took the detective's coat and hung it up, while the lieutenant seated himself on the opposite end of the sofa from Kitty.
I had a message at the precinct that you had some information for me, he said.
Yes, that's correct. Kitty collected her handbag and passed the pawn tickets and the note she'd found to the lieutenant.
Where did you find these, ma'am?
he asked.
Kitty explained about assisting Peggy's brother to pack her belongings and the discovery in her handbag. The policeman tucked them safely away in his notebook.
Pity there's no date or signature on this note.
He didn't look too pleased with her discovery, but that might well have been because he was embarrassed that his colleagues had not been the ones to find them when they searched through Peggy's things. Kitty refrained from saying that had been what she and Matt had both thought too.
Was there anything more that you wanted me to know?
Lieutenant Tanfield glanced around at them all. Well, Kitty gave her father an apologetic look and told the policeman everything that Titania and Mortimer had said. The policeman listened with a grave face and the occasional glance at Mortimer, who was now dribbling from the corner of his lips.
It seems I need to speak to both Mr. and Mrs. Liggett again, the lieutenant said.
I don't know if any of this is relevant too. Kitty told him what Lorena had said regarding the large legacy for Horatio. This was also new information for Matt and her father, since she hadn't had a chance to tell them what Lorena had said when they had arrived with Mortimer.
Thank you, Mrs. Bryant. Yes, I am aware of the contents of Mrs. Dangerfield's will. In fact, I think you have a small bequest in there too, sir.
The lieutenant looked at Edgar.
So my daughter told me. Lorena dropped in to let me know. It's just a token thing, not worth a great deal in monetary terms, merely sentimental value.
Edgar waved a careless hand. Kitty was a little irked that the policeman knew about the will and its contents already. I presume the bulk of Nora's estate was left to Lorena, she said.
Yes, Mrs. Dangerfield left her money sewn up in such a way that only her daughter can touch it, and obviously any future children she might have would also benefit,
Lieutenant Tanfield said. Kitty hadn't thought about Lorena and Rudolph having children. She wasn't sure how long they had been married. She would have guessed that Lorena was at least 10 years older than her, however.
Were there any other large bequests, other than the one to Horatio? Matt asked. Just some charitable donations to the orphanage that Mrs. Dangerfield and her husband supported, and, of course, to various art trusts and museums. The bequest to Mr. Blackstock would not have been relevant if he had left her employment before she passed away,
Lieutenant Tanfield said. Kitty's eyes widened at this. $10,000 to an impoverished man was a huge motive for murder, especially if he wouldn't have received a single cent after he had been retired from her service. Had Horatio known about the contents of the will, Kitty wondered.
Mrs. Dangerfield's attorney did say that she had made an appointment for the new year to review the contents of her will,
Lieutenant Tanfield said as he tucked his notebook safely back inside his pocket.
Did he know what her intentions were? Matt asked.
I believe she was considering reducing her bequest to her daughter to make provision for Mr. Liggett. She had said something to him about a future marriage.
Lieutenant Tanfield looked at the sleeping man. Mortimer let out a rippling snore and snuffled deeper into the armchair.
How much has he had to drink?
The policeman asked. Edgar gave an eloquent shrug.
I have no idea. I was told when we tracked him down that he was hammering on the bar door just before they opened and then kept them coming once he got inside.
Have you had any sense out of him since you went and got him?
Lieutenant Tanfield asked.
Only what we've just told you, Matt said. I have to say that Titania Liggett wasn't in much better shape when she came looking for him earlier.
In vino veritas. Isn't that what you English say?
Lieutenant Tanfield stood and placed his hand on Mortimer's shoulder and gave him a shake. Kitty was impressed by the policeman's quote and watched as Mortimer started in response to the agitation. His eyes opened, and a look of panic spread across his face when he realized who had disturbed him.
Mr. Liggett, I think you and I need to have a chat. Perhaps with your wife present, too,
the policeman suggested. Mortimer's pale complexion turned slightly puce.
Oh, dear Lord, not with Titania. Perhaps if we go down to your apartment?
Lieutenant Tanfield nodded at Matt, and he went to the hall to collect both the policeman's and Mortimer's overcoats.
Is it really necessary? I think I've told you everything I know already.
Mortimer protested when he realized the policeman was serious.
Then it won't take very long,
Lieutenant Tanfield assured him.
Now then, up you come.
He and Matt levered Mortimer from the chair. Lieutenant Tanfield put on his coat while Matt assisted Mortimer with his.
Thank you for the things, Mrs. Bryant, ma'am. Please, though, no more investigating.
Very well, Kitty said, as the policeman chivied Mortimer out of the lounge and into the hallway. She was rather irked that her helpfulness had been rewarded with a rebuke.
Well, that's rather a relief now Morty's gone, Edgar said, as the door closed behind them. Righty-ho, I think perhaps a spot of lunch is in order, and then I'll go and collect my bequest.
Chapter 16. Matt thought Kitty looked rather deflated now their visitors had departed. He was not surprised after the lieutenant's warning to stop any further investigating. Edgar's Christmas tree and his cards were providing the only spots of upcoming festive cheer in the apartment. Christmas was now only 2 days away, but with the drama of recent events, the sparkle had fizzled from the festive season.
Good idea. Let's go out for lunch, he suggested.
He turned to his father-in-law.
Edgar, you must know some good restaurants.
Of course. Everywhere might be a tad busy with the time of year, Edgar mused. Let me see if I can snag us a reservation.
He picked up the telephone receiver and began to dial.
Come on, Kitty, old thing. Get your glad rags on. Let's go out and enjoy the city. Get a bit of Christmas spirit back, Matt suggested.
She looked a little doubtful for a second, but her stomach gave an audible low growl. You're right. We need to do something nice, and as you can hear, I'm starving. With that, she kissed his cheek affectionately and went to refresh her lipstick and prepare for going out.
I've managed to get us a table at a rather nice little spot, I know, Edgar said as he ended the call and started to dial again. I'll ask Enrique to get us a cab and we'll head off.
Snow was falling once again when they stepped outside the building and into the taxi. Edgar gave the address of the restaurant, which Matt assumed was not too far away. Kitty looked out of the window with interest at the crowded streets, blurred by the large, whirling white flakes of snow. The stores were decorated for Christmas, and shoppers laden with parcels mingled with people who were obviously city workers. They passed the Flatiron Building, with its distinct triangular shape, something she had only seen before in a magazine article. Tomorrow was Christmas Eve, and time was running out for people to get their shopping completed. The restaurant Edgar had secured a reservation at was situated a couple of blocks away in a high-end row of shops. They entered through polished brass and oak doors into a world of glittering, hushed opulence. It was a far cry from the Silver Rose, where Edgar had taken him a few hours earlier. There were no signs of the depression here. A smartly dressed maitre d' checked their reservation and showed them to a table situated discreetly in a quieter part of the busy restaurant. They gave their coats to the staff and settled themselves at the white-clothed table to consider the menu and to look around at their fellow diners. The room was decorated for Christmas in red and silver, with a Christmas tree either side of the door where they had come in and a much larger one near the waiter's station.
This all looks rather splendid. Kitty smiled happily at her father as she opened the red leather-bound menu.
This was one of Nora's favourite watering holes. We've had many a convivial luncheon here, her father answered a touch sadly as he too looked at the dishes on offer.
It all looks wonderful. And there is so much choice.
Kitty studied the courses. A waiter came for their drinks order, and Edgar invited Matt to choose the wine. Once that was settled, they concentrated on selecting their meals and gave that order to their server. Once the business part was done, Kitty settled happily in her seat. Matt was pleased to see her starting to relax again. She had been so worried about Edgar when they had left England, then discovering that, as usual, he had been less than honest about his situation when they had arrived, had been distressing. Add in two murders in quick succession, and it was no wonder they were not feeling very festive. It also seemed that despite their first intentions of not getting embroiled in investigating Nora and Peggy's deaths, they had been doing exactly that. Apart from the Carol concert and a spot of Christmas shopping, it had hardly been a holiday. Tomorrow was their wedding anniversary, and Matt hoped that perhaps Kitty might heed the policeman's warning to leave the murder investigation to him. It didn't seem that Edgar was in the frame after all. The waiter returned with their first course of clam chowder. The soup smelled delicious as it was set in front of them, and Matt realized he was as hungry as Kitty. Once they had finished and the empty dishes had been cleared, ready for the next course, Edgar picked up his wine glass.
"I wonder if I could propose a little toast, for old time's sake. I think I am becoming increasingly sentimental as I grow older. But I should like us to raise our glasses in memory of Nora. She was a good neighbour and a dear friend. I shall miss her."
Kitty gave her father an understanding smile. "Of course." She picked up her own glass, and Matt followed suit.
"To Nora," Edgar said,
and they chinked their glasses together. Matt followed his father-in-law's toast with one to Kitty ahead of their upcoming anniversary as a way of boosting all their spirits. The restaurant seemed busier than ever as they tucked into the next course. Kitty had chosen fish, while Matt and Edgar had both selected the escalop of beef. Matt noticed several of the tables changing over as parties of diners left and new groups arrived. Kitty, too, was taking a keen interest in her surroundings.
"I'm sure that woman over there in that darling hat is that film star who Alice is so keen on. We saw a film together just before we came away, and she was the star."
Kitty discreetly indicated a table near the centre of the room.
"Alice would absolutely love this," Matt agreed.
He knew Kitty's friend adored her films and avidly read every magazine she could get that discussed their lives, homes, and clothes. Edgar finished his meal and placed his cutlery neatly on his plate.
"It's a very popular spot with stars when they are in town, so I expect you're right."
The table Kitty had indicated was certainly attracting attention, and a couple of people approached the woman, seemingly seeking autographs.
"How very exciting," Kitty said.
"Aren't you going to try and get her signature for Alice?" Edgar asked.
Kitty blushed and shook her head.
"Oh no, it would be a dreadful imposition. I think the poor woman should be allowed to enjoy the rest of her meal in peace. Alice might love an autograph, but she wouldn't want me to upset anyone by doing so."
Matt chuckled. He suspected Kitty was right. The star certainly looked as if she would prefer to eat her meal rather than smile and sign autographs for people. Kitty continued to gaze around the room. Suddenly, Matt saw her smile fade on her lips as she peered intently towards a table for two, partly hidden by the Christmas tree.
"What is it, darling?" he asked.
"I could swear that's Rudolph over there in the far corner, but if it is him, that girl is most definitely not Lorena," Kitty said.
Matt leaned slightly to the side to take a better look.
"I think you're right."
The woman seated opposite Rudolph looked very young, probably 19 or 20. She had soft blonde short hair and big blue eyes. Rudolph appeared to be holding her hand as the girl hung on to his every word.
"Rudolph? Where?"
Edgar turned his head to try and see where Matt and Kitty were looking.
"Shh, Papa, be discreet,"
Kitty urged as the waiter returned to clear their table, ready for dessert. Edgar turned back to sit straight in his seat.
"It does look like Rudolph," he agreed,
and looked at the waiter.
"I say, the fellow over there with the young lady, is that Mr. Briggs?"
The waiter paused in his stacking of the plates, Matt guessed he must be one of the regular staff from the way Edgar had asked the question.
"I believe so, sir,"
the man answered discreetly and hurried away with the crockery before anyone could ask anything else.
"The staff here all know Rudolph well. He used to come with Lorena and Nora. It's mighty bold of him to be here with another woman right after Nora's death," Edgar mused.
"I wondered why he hadn't been with Lorena this morning to visit her mother's attorney for the will reading," Kitty said.
"I don't suppose he would have been invited,"
Edgar said, before taking another sip of wine.
"Really? Why ever not?" Kitty asked.
"Well, because he would know that Nora wouldn't have left him anything. It would all go to Lorena, and, knowing Lorena, she wouldn't want him to have any idea of the exact figures involved. She spends enough on him already. Nora didn't really approve at all of Rudolph, so she cut down Lorena's allowance after the business in Hawaii,"
Edgar explained with a shrug. Matt saw Kitty's brow crinkle into a frown.
"Then why is he here, behaving like a single man? Surely he'd be making nice with Lorena, now the financial shackles are off, presumably, and he can get her to give him whatever he wants."
The waiter returned once more to set their desserts in front of them. Kitty had a meringue nest with winter fruits, while Edgar and Matt had both opted for New York cheesecake with cream.
"Perhaps Lorena hasn't been very willing to play ball. He might be trying to make her jealous. You know, make her think she could be losing him so she'll splash out,"
Edgar suggested as he dug his spoon into his dessert. Matt thought Edgar might have a point, but he could tell from the way Kitty was attacking her meringue that she didn't think much of the idea. Rudolph and his mysterious lady friend were just receiving their desserts when their waiter brought the coffees to Edgar's table.
"That was a lovely meal."
Kitty dabbed her linen napkin at the corners of her mouth with a satisfied look on her face. Matt noticed she kept glancing in Rudolph's direction as she sipped her drink, and he guessed that she longed to know what was going on at the other table. Rudolph signalled to the waiter to pay his tab, and it was clear that he and his companion were ready to leave. After glancing around at Kitty and Edgar, Matt could see they were all finished as well. He called their waiter so they could also pay their bill.
"I'll be back in just a minute."
Kitty sprang to her feet as the waiter approached. She gathered her handbag and hurried away towards the ladies' restroom. Matt suppressed a grin when he realised that Rudolph's lady friend had also gone in the same direction. Kitty was pleased to see that the restroom was quiet when she entered. The bathroom was as elegant as the restaurant, with dark green tiles, ornate gold-framed mirrors and fresh flowers on the countertops beside the sinks. Rudolph's friend had entered a stall, so Kitty stationed herself by the mirrors and took out her lipstick. At the very least, she wanted to get a good look at the girl. Hopefully she could engage her in conversation. After a minute, the girl emerged and came to the sink beside Kitty to wash her hands. Kitty saw that her first impressions were correct. The girl was young and wearing rather more makeup than Kitty would have thought appropriate for daytime. Her clothes were stylish, but clearly inexpensive. She gave Kitty a friendly smile as she took a silver compact studded with jewels from her bag and started to powder her nose. Kitty carefully reapplied her own pale rose lipstick.
"I say, that's a really sweet little compact," Kitty said conversationally.
The compact the girl was using looked expensive. The girl blushed with pride.
"Thanks. It was a gift from my boyfriend. He often gives me little surprises like that."
She had a broad New York accent.
"Lucky girl. Was that the handsome man you were with earlier?"
Kitty asked as she replaced the lid on her lipstick.
"Yes. Lunch today was another treat, as it's my birthday. Rudy is so generous."
The girl beamed at Kitty.
"How lovely. Many happy returns of the day," Kitty said, as she fluffed up her own blonde locks in front of the mirror. "Your accent is just the cutest thing. Are you from England?"
the girl asked. "Yes, I'm here visiting family for Christmas," Kitty said.
"You certainly picked the winter weather.
They say more snow is on the way. Looks like it'll be a white Christmas.
The girl gave a theatrical shiver as she popped her compact back inside her cheap imitation leather bag. Oh dear, it's already very cold. Are you from New York? Kitty asked.
Born and bred, the girl confirmed. I hope you enjoy your stay.
She smiled at Kitty and left. Kitty waited a couple of minutes before rejoining Matt and Edgar. She didn't want her new friend to point her out to Rudolph.
The maitre d' is arranging a taxi to save us from waiting outside in the cold, Matt informed her when she arrived back at the table.
Wonderful. Kitty quickly told them what the girl had said. Her father's eyebrows rose in surprise.
Rudolph had better hope that Lorena doesn't find out that her husband is treating other women with her money.
Quite. It sounds as if Rudolph has known her for some time, Kitty agreed, as she accepted assistance with donning her fur coat, ready to venture back out into the snowy New York streets.
I suppose I had better collect my inheritance from Nora's apartment when we get back, Kitty's father said as they climbed into the taxi.
Kitty gave him a sharp look. She didn't trust his innocent expression or his reluctance to enlarge on what this bequest was supposed to be. Her father was often fond of teasing her, however, and she had no intention of playing his game by asking questions.
I suppose so. Lorena certainly appeared very keen that you should collect it, Kitty said.
Dear Nora, such a kind and generous soul.
A sad expression settled on her father's face, so Kitty didn't press him any further. She suspected he was rather enjoying teasing her about this unexpected legacy. While they had been inside the restaurant eating lunch, the snow had continued to fall and the streets were less busy than before. The electric lights illuminating the stores cast eerie yellow reflections of the Christmas displays onto the slush-covered sidewalks. Snow in shades of grey, black and white lay heaped up in the gutters and against the walls of the buildings. Shoppers battled with umbrellas and packages as they slithered and slipped their way along. The taxi took a different route, and this time they passed one of the museums that Kitty hoped to visit before they were due to return to England. The car pulled up outside their building and Kitty shivered as Matt assisted her out onto the slippery pavement.
Shall we accompany you to Nora's apartment? Matt asked Edgar as they stamped the snow from their boots onto the mat in the lobby.
Kitty's father smiled.
Why not? Let's go right on up. No time like the present, eh?
They entered the elevator and Matt closed the cage before Edgar pressed the button to begin their ascent. Kitty knew her husband was just as curious as she was to learn more about Nora's bequest. Edgar pressed the doorbell at Nora's apartment once they were all out of the elevator. Horatio Blackstock opened the door.
Good afternoon, Mr. Underhay.
He greeted Edgar cordially before saying hello to Kitty and Matt.
Is it convenient to collect the item Nora left to me? Edgar asked. Mrs. Briggs said that you would be expecting me to pick it up.
Horatio inclined his head solemnly.
Yes, sir. Please come inside. Miss Lorena is keen to get everything squared away. She and Mr. Rudolph will be moving in here in a few weeks' time.
Kitty followed Matt and her father inside the apartment. Horatio appeared to have wasted no time in following Lorena's instructions. Nora was barely cold, and there were large packing boxes everywhere. All signs of Christmas were gone.
Good heavens, you have been busy,
Edgar remarked as they entered the drawing room.
Miss Lorena's instructions, Horatio said, as he gazed sadly around the elegant room, now untidy and denuded of most of its treasures.
I take it the picture is still hanging in place at present? Edgar asked.
Yes, Mr. Underhay. I've not yet had the heart to begin packing up Miss Nora's personal possessions,
Horatio said.
May I go through?
Edgar asked politely.
Of course, sir. Please help yourself. If you require assistance, I am happy to oblige,
Horatio offered. Edgar disappeared off towards what Kitty assumed was Nora's boudoir. She took a seat on the edge of one of Nora's elegant chairs.
I imagine that discovering Nora had thought of you in her will must have been a surprise, Kitty said to the manservant. Lorena told me that her mother had left you a substantial sum.
Yes, I never thought for one moment that she would remember me and be so generous,
Horatio said.
Will your plans change now that you will receive more money? Matt asked. It means I shall be able to retire, as Miss Nora suggested. I can travel back to my family and perhaps purchase a small home there. I don't mind admitting the news of the bequest and the size of it has come as a welcome relief,
Horatio said. Kitty could see that despite his sadness, the heavy load the elderly man had appeared to be carrying seemed to have slipped from his shoulders. She wondered if he had known about Nora's will and the legacy she had left him. $10,000 was a lot of money and a sizable motive. Edgar popped back into the drawing room.
I say, Horatio, old bean, I don't suppose you have a bit of sacking or something to wrap the picture up? Of course, sir.
The manservant went to the kitchen and returned with a clean flour sack.
I believe this might suffice, Mr. Underhay.
Edgar thanked him and returned to Nora's room. Matt exchanged a glance with her, and she guessed that he too wondered what this picture was that Nora had been keen to give to her father. I don't suppose there has been any more news on Nora's missing jewels, Kitty mused. Horatio shook his greying, grizzled head.
No, Mrs. Bryant. That part is deeply troubling to me, I must admit. Usually, when Miss Nora was ready to retire to bed or after an occasion, she would take off her most valuable items and give them to me to lock up in her safe. And she didn't do that after the party?
Matt asked.
No, sir. I was tidying up after the staff she'd hired had all gone. Peggy had counted the money and that was bagged, ready to be locked away. Miss Nora told me to lock up the money, but she didn't take off her jewelry.
Horatio frowned as he spoke.
I told the lieutenant it was real odd.
Did you think she might be planning to go out? Kitty asked. Horatio sighed and shrugged.
Miss Nora often stepped out at night when it was late. Sometimes for a few minutes, sometimes longer. She would say not to wait up for her.
She didn't say anything the night of the party, Kitty pressed.
She told me and Peggy to go to bed as it was late. Looking back now, she seemed, well, a bit distracted, I suppose. She kept twiddling with her wedding ring. She often did that when something was playing on her mind,
Horatio said.
I admit I was exhausted, so I went right off to bed. You didn't hear or see anyone come back to the apartment after the party had ended?
Matt asked.
No, sir. The police asked me the same thing, but my room is on the other side of the apartment.
Horatio indicated towards the kitchenette area. Did Peggy say anything to you about Nora seeming distracted or keeping her jewelry on? Kitty wondered if the girl had said anything. She knew from experience how servants would talk about their masters and mistresses. Horatio scratched his head, furrows forming on his forehead.
She did say something odd. I'd said as how Miss Nora must be tired. It was after we'd put the money in the safe and Miss Nora was gone to her room. She said that was probably what came of minding everyone's business.
Kitty wondered whose business Peggy had been referring to and whether that was why she too had been killed. Had Nora discovered something about Peggy?
Chapter 17. Edgar emerged from Nora's bedroom at that point, carrying a square, flat object wrapped in the flour sack under his arm.
Ta, ever so, old bean. It'll be strange for me having Lorena and Rudolph living here. Still, I suppose it's considerably larger than their place.
Edgar looked around a little sadly at the packing cases.
The end of an era,
Horatio agreed.
It's rather sad and somewhat surprising that Lorena is in such a hurry, especially after poor Peggy's death here, Matt remarked.
Perhaps their lease is due for renewal, Edgar suggested.
Horatio said nothing, but Kitty thought the manservant's expression was very eloquent. They said their farewells and went back downstairs to Edgar's apartment. Once they had divested themselves of their coats, Kitty took a seat on the sofa. Edgar had placed his parcel down carefully on the small dining table.
Well, Pa, are you going to satisfy our curiosity now and show us your mysterious bequest? Kitty asked, her lips twitching in a smile.
Yes, we are both agog at the secrecy, Matt added as he took his place next to Kitty. I'm rather afraid you will be a tad disappointed, Edgar said as he moved to the parcel. This picture was something that Nora and I both spotted about 18 months ago at a charity auction. We both wanted it and got into something of a bidding war, which drove the price much higher than I was prepared to pay. Nora, of course, eventually emerged victorious. She always used to joke that she would leave it to me one day in her will, since I wanted it so much.
His expression sobered.
Neither of us ever really thought that would be the case. Or if it was, then it would be many years from now.
Now I am very curious to see this picture, Kitty said. She hoped it wouldn't prove to be anything too risque.
Edgar grinned and carefully removed the flower sack. He picked the picture up and turned to face them, holding it up so they could see it. Kitty stared at it for a moment.
Isn't that a picture of Exeter Cathedral? She asked in bewilderment.
The picture was a watercolour showing the ancient stone building with the green in front and a young couple promenading in the foreground, dressed in clothes from some 20 or so years earlier. Edgar laughed.
Yes, I wanted it, as it reminded me of home. Nora wanted it because she and her husband are the couple in the picture. Look closely, you may recognise her. It was done as a sketch, apparently, when they were on honeymoon years ago. She never saw the finished item and they lost the artist's information. When it turned up at the auction over here, she was completely baffled.
It has certainly travelled quite a distance, Kitty agreed. Who is the artist?
That's another tale. At the time he painted this, he was quite unknown, but he's since become quite in fashion, apparently. At least that was what Nora told me. She was gloating about having acquired a bargain.
Edgar smiled.
We used to tease each other all the time over it. If we had a slight tiff, she would say, "You're not getting the picture now." If I was cross with her, I would say she had better watch that picture or it might go missing.
His smile faded.
You really were good friends, weren't you?
Kitty placed her hand on his arm and kissed his cheek.
Poor Pa. I think she'd be happy, though, knowing you finally owned this.
Edgar smiled back at her.
I've no doubt she's perched on a cloud somewhere, glass of champagne in hand, hugging herself in delight at having pulled off one last jape. It is quite a fine picture.
Matt had come to join Kitty and peered at the painting.
Nora had it hanging in her bedroom where she could see it when she lay in bed. She told me it reminded her of happy times with her husband.
Edgar's smile had disappeared once more.
I hope they catch whoever killed her soon.
Kitty pressed his arm once more and wandered back to the sofa. Edgar carefully placed the picture back down on the flower sack. Matt had crossed to the apartment window and was looking out at the darkening sky and the whirling white flakes hitting the window pane. Below, the street traffic seemed to have almost come to a halt, with few motor cars still about. Instead, it was mainly the horse-drawn carts and carriages that were still out in the snow. Daylight was fading quickly now, with the snowfall, and Kitty shivered as her father turned on the silk-shaded lamps. It would soon be time to draw the curtains against the cold and the dark. It all made her question once more why Nora had gone downstairs, dressed in her evening dress, and all her jewellery. It had been a freezing cold night, and surely she could have seen whoever she was meeting in her apartment. She had taken a moment to pull on her fur wrap, and Horatio thought she had been anxious about something.
So perhaps a meeting that she anticipated would be brief, but where she had felt the need to impress. One she hadn't wanted anyone to know about.